T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
It's Sunday morning. I'm Blaise Olson. This is Sunday Take on February 6th, 2022. It's been another one of those weeks. The Minnesota is tense, and for good reason. It was a big news week in politics, from the caucuses to the killing of Amir Locke. I reflected as I wrote Friday morning about that after watching the video, and I have one take, and maybe this is the take that drives the year. There's got to be a better way. There's got to be a better way to execute a search warrant, and there's got to be a better way for campaigns, dialogues, partisanship to be done throughout this year. I'll try to do it here every Sunday. I'll try to do it during the week, in the newsletter and on the radio. But that's all I got this week as we dive into a show that has Cedric Frazier, representative, DFL lead on public safety, Dr. Scott Jensen, the clear frontrunner in the Republican race for governor, and the new guy in the race, former Hennepin County Sheriff Rich Stanek. I'm Blaise Olson. You're listening to Sunday Take. We'll be right back.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
After the end of a good fight, you deserve an ice-cold reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. You've earned this rich golden lager with a crisp, refreshing taste. Because you know, the bigger the fight, the better the reward. You put in the hours, the energy, the tough labor. You are a fighter, and Medela is your reward. Medela, the mark of a fighter. Drink responsibly. Beer imported by Crown Imports, Chicago, Illinois.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Joining me now on Sunday Take is Representative Cedric Frazier. Representative Frazier has been leading the criminal justice reform efforts of House DFLers. And in fact, this week had 3 hearings where his package was presented Tuesday, Thursday, and Friday in the House. Representative Frazier, thanks for joining me now.
Good to be here.
Obviously, the debate in the legislature the last couple of years has been robust. It's been tense. It's been polarizing. But you've kind of looked at this public safety innovation package, $100 million investment. Can you give us kind of the key initiatives or points of this new package that you really think is important to get through the House this year?
Yeah, I mean, we're taking a look. It's a comprehensive package. You know, we've got like 3 points. We've got the community crime prevention pieces to kind of get at the root cause issues of what's causing crimes in our communities. That's a $40 million investment to work with our community crime prevention partners, nonprofits, churches, schools, just so they can work within the community and to help prevent crimes. That's a big piece of it. Those resources we tend to make ongoing, not the entire $40 million, but at a base level of $10 million to have ongoing so that we can make sure those organizations and those programs are sustainable.
When you're talking to community leaders in the communities about prevention, how to keep kids out of trouble, I'm just going to say it that way because that's the way it was talked about when I was a kid. What do they need? What is it that they need? Because let's just start with youth and young adults. That seems to be the place where I'll just say a lot of the frustrations and the kind of misunderstandings of how it's been dealt with by prosecutors is this past year. But on the flip side, what do community leaders need? And what do we need from prosecutors when it comes to youth violent crime, gun related crime?
I mean, communities want resources, sustained resources. I mean, just the reality is we've had some community members, volunteers, churches out in our communities doing this type of crime prevention work for years, decades now. Many of them do it on very little budgets or no budgets. It's just volunteer time. You know, when you look at most recently the 21 Days of Peace that's been done in Minneapolis, and then there's a similar program being done in St. Paul, those are volunteers. Those are community members. Those are moms. Those are dads. Those are grandparents that are out there in the community saying, hey, young people, hey, community members, we want to make sure that our neighborhoods are staying safe. So we're going to put ourselves out here to make sure we're connecting with folks, make sure we're de-escalating things or preventing things from happening. So sustainable resources are good for those folks. Because then we can get individuals out there that are trained in de-escalation, that are trained to identify or see when problems may be arising and interrupt those things before they can actually happen. In terms of, with prosecution, I think the reality is what we're looking at, this is a national thing. This isn't just a Minnesota thing. It's not just a Minneapolis thing. It's not just a St. Paul thing. It's not just an Edina thing. This is a national uptick in crime that we're seeing. And from a prosecutor standpoint, I imagine that they also have to be reeling from what's happened during the pandemic, right? You've got certain institutions have closed. Certain institutions have been disrupted in terms of that have provided services for our young people, for our young adults, and for community members. I mean, those type of things, all these things are interconnected. And I think that's the biggest part of this conversation that we're trying to have with this public innovation package that I'm carrying, is that we have so many things that are interconnected that kind of feed into or play a part in some of the crimes that are happening in our communities. And we really need to take a look at those root cause issues and provide resources and strategies to attack them at the root cause to prevent crime.
One of the things that was specific before in a crime reduction package, a decade or so more ago, was midnight basketball. I'm just going to use that as an example. But a few years ago in Minnesota, it was making sure Somali youth had sports leagues and things to keep them busy.
Yeah.
When you and I had our conversation after you got elected, you talked about moving to Minnesota for sports, to rural Minnesota, your experience. You know, and I know that there are some national trends here, but it's shocking to Minnesotans because we've avoided some of those national trends before, especially on these kinds of issues. Are there specific programs that either got lost during the pandemic, shut down during the pandemic? Are there specific tools? Because I think we talk about sustaining, but in the mind of a listener or a citizen, it's what do we need to offer these kids to have them not do this? Is it education? Is it jobs? Is it what is it? Because I will tell you that, I told this story earlier today. One of my occasions when I was in elementary school was I stole something from a convenience store and police drove me home and I was afraid of the police, but I was more afraid of my mom. But, I learned a lesson. And I don't want to say that it's that simple, but there is this idea that we need to understand the specific things that are going to happen in these communities that the money is going to go to.
Yeah. I'll tell you just, as a kid growing up in Chicago, you touched on a couple of things. Well, one, through my elementary schools, grammar schools is what we call them in Chicago.
Yep.
through our schools, we had before school programming, we had after school programming. There was a summer job program that kept kids engaged and kept them in structured places and doing positive things. That's what I'll say. And let me to the point about Minnesota how we've had these trends before, and Minnesota has been able to kind of avoid them. The reality is that no one has been able to avoid this pandemic. That's the reality. Everybody has been impacted by the pandemic in terms of we've had stay-at-home orders, things have closed, school days have been disrupted. I mean, we provided virtual learning, but in terms of the physical spaces being open to kids, those things have been disrupted. Nonprofits have been disrupted. All these types of things have been disrupted. Minnesota, it has not been immune from that. And I think that is something that we have to kind of center when we're having this conversation about why not Minnesota in the past. So kind of what we're looking at with this innovation safety solution bill is how do we inoculate ourselves so in the future that we don't, when there's a trend like this, that we are immune from this, that we do inoculate ourselves, that if we do see any type of changes, it's very minimal or minor, and it's not like the rest of the nation is seeing. And so those resources would be to programs like that, to school programs, for before and after school programs, to youth leagues, for sporting events, for job training, all those types of things that we know when we get young people involved in or community members involved in, it creates a positive structure for folks to be engaged in, as opposed to being out with idle time, getting into something that they should not get into.
My guest is Representative Cedric Frazier. He's the House Democratic lead on public safety and crime prevention package. There's two different conversations happening at the legislature this year. How do they come together? You're talking about investment in some of these programs, keeping people busy. The other is, how do we recruit and retain more police officers as people have left? And like every industry, they're having trouble making sure we have enough police. Do these somehow come together as one big package, or are we speaking two different languages here?
No, in fact, I was going to try to get to this in my opening comments, but there's other pieces to the public safety innovation package that I'm carrying. There is also a piece about recruitment and retention that we're proposing a task force of 15 folks in a task force. It would have all stakeholders. It would have law enforcement. It would have law enforcement leaders. It would have state leaders, community leaders, to discuss how we can open other pathways into law enforcement, to come up with some recommendations on how we do that. I agree. Law enforcement has not been immune. These are the conversations I'm having with law enforcement leaders. It has not been immune from the dearth of quality applicants or candidates or cadets to go into the profession. And this goes to the question of, you know, for some, their solution to solving the uptick in crime is just like throw a bunch of money and hire more cops. But the reality is, you don't have individuals out there that you can hire. So we have to figure out a way that we can provide maybe different pathways than we have now to bring more officers into the profession. And that's also providing a focus on how do we diversify the ranks of our law enforcement? How do we have individuals that look like the communities that they're sworn to protect and serve? And even if they don't look like the communities that they're sworn to protect and serve, because we know not all of our communities are super diverse, but those officers should actually look like the people that are transient through those communities, so that they know that there are folks that have similar lived experiences when they have to have an interaction with law enforcement. But I think you're absolutely right. We have to focus on that piece, and that piece is in the bill. It's in regards to recruitment and providing recommendations for pathways to that. And it is a package. It's not, we don't have to separate these things. All these things are intertwined. There's also a piece in the bill specifically aimed at increasing the capacity for law enforcement, putting more boots on the ground. This is about getting officers in the community, out of their squad cars, engaging with the community, but being there on the ground, because data has shown us when we have officers with boots on the ground like that in areas that have had an increase in crime, there can be a deterrent, but it also allows for developing relationships with those communities, which trust and relationship building is an essential part of any public safety framework.
We could talk about this obviously for the full hour, but I want to make sure that we address the news of this last week. We've seen the video. We've talked about it. You on Friday held space with other legislators to grieve Mayor Locke and the, you know, no knock warrant that in 9 seconds that I only had one take on Friday morning after I watched it was there's got to be a better way. Where does this fit? How does this not further polarize a discussion at the Capitol about police and community? Because once again, here we are in Minnesota at the center of this discussion.
Yeah, I was saying to someone earlier, Minnesotans are tired. We're tired of being the spotlight for these issues. We're in the midst of almost 2 years of going through a pandemic, and now we're in the midst of almost 2 years of having a spotlight on us for policing issues where our officers that are sworn to protect have taken a life of someone in the community. In regards to the no-knock warrants, I absolutely think there's a better way to do it. That is the most frustrating thing about me, and what angers me the most is that these deaths, these killings, I believe are preventable. Mm-hmm. And we should be focusing all our energy as best we can as legislators to figure out ways to put policies in place to make sure that they don't continue to happen. And I think that's where we failed. That's where we failed to do that. We had a chance to do more on no-knock warrants last session. We didn't do that. We did not do that. I'm hoping this is the opportunity, or we can. At least we can say to Minnesotans and communities, this will no longer be a situation that creates an opportunity for this type of interaction and conflict where the individual who wasn't even on or part of this warrant dies. We need to come together as legislators, and we need to do that. And I think we need to put more restrictions on no-knock warrants to make sure this doesn't happen again.
Sounds good. Representative Cedric Frazier, thanks for joining me. Next up on Sunday Take, he won the Republican straw poll. He's the clear front runner in the nomination for Republican to face Governor Tim Walz. Dr. Scott Jensen will join me next on News Talk 830 WCCO. Joining me now is Dr. Scott Jensen on Sunday Take. He won the Republican straw poll this week. He is the leader in financial resources for the campaign. And, you know, he might not believe it, but I declared him the front runner to win the Republican nomination this week. Dr. Scott Jensen, thanks for joining me.
It's my pleasure, Blois, and it's a privilege to be on your show.
You know, I look back at how we got to know each other, and it was when you were first elected to the Senate. You called me and said, I want to have a cup of coffee, because some people think you know what's going on and some people think you're just, you know, a partisan. And I've always appreciated our frank conversations. So I'm glad that you could join me today. Where we've been the last 2 years, your time in the Senate, what you've experienced with COVID, with this campaign, summarize kind of how you think middle Minnesota or everyday Minnesotans can understand what you're trying to do versus just Republican delegates.
It's easy to throw out the word transparency because everybody sort of wants to claim that. But I'm going to go ahead and do it one more time. I think that I'm probably one of the more transparent people on the political scene, at least in the Republican Party in Minnesota. And I don't mean to be boastful when I say that. I was born, I think, skeptical. My dad confirmed that that's a good thing to do. My family's always been skeptical. So as I've been out on the campaign trail for the last year, and even when I was in the Senate for 4 years, I think I was pretty transparent. I was pretty skeptical. Sometimes I was told, well, this is what you're supposed to do. And I'd say, well, that doesn't make any sense. So I guess there are times where my transparency has been something that put me in hot water. I'd go places that were probably politically fraught with danger. But I think middle Minnesota is saying, this Dr. Jensen, he's willing to say what he's thinking. He tries to provide context. He will acknowledge when he wasn't quite right. You know, he got it wrong. Yesterday on Justice and Drew, they were kind enough to say that I was smarter than a rock, and that was really nice of them. But I hope that people think that, you know, I'm no know-it-all. And I think that if I'm given a chance to have a conversation with virtually anyone for an hour or two, I think we can carve out some common ground and have a reasonable conversation.
I think that's interesting in that I do give you credit. When you got elected to the Senate, when you're in the Senate, you're always accessible. Shared your views, whether it was on marijuana, whether it was on guns, whether it was on. And I think that is refreshing. And I have said, you know, in this race for governor that an independent minded, refreshing voice, that there's a lane there. I've also said, you know, Governor Walz is vulnerable. And as I look at your campaign, and I'm fascinated by governor's races. You're going to hear that a lot this year. Okay. I love governor's races. I think it's one of the most relatable offices for citizens because it's here in Minnesota. And so as you think about that and you think about kind of, I'll call it the ping pong ball of COVID or the social media battles on COVID, how do you peel all that away? The emotion of COVID and all the emotions of people related to hot button issues and kind of let them know what kind of governor you would be if you win, because hopefully we're out of the ping pong ball of government when you're elected or shortly after.
Good question. You had made a comment the other day about me. You'd said something about you thought that we would benefit if I would be focused on trying to tighten up the message. And I thought that was valid criticism. I think sometimes because I'm so used to being a family doc and I have these conversations with my patients, they do sort of ping pong around. Sometimes I'll be talking about their congestive heart failure and all of a sudden they'll start to cry because they lost their spouse or something.
Yeah.
And so I think that I do need to make that transition into tightening things up. In terms of peeling away what's happened with COVID, I would want people to realize that I've been a business person. I've started a couple of clinics. I've started a couple of restaurants. I've hired hundreds of people. I've built a couple of commercial buildings. I know the world of business. I might not be any guru, but I do business. And I've been a family doc, and I've had a wonderful career, and I've been the family doctor of the year in Minnesota. So I think I've been a pretty good doc. I make my mistakes, to be sure. And I think that I've been on the school board for 10 years, and I've been involved in Chamber of Commerce and Rotary and Lions Club. And so I think I have a broad swath of communication with everyday people. And I'm hoping that people realize that. I try not to talk in terms that people don't understand. And I am offended by how we seem to politicize issues. And we don't talk about issues in the words of the common person. We let politicians make them into jargon. So we say public safety. But what would that mean? I mean, I think for a lot of people, that means I want to be able to send my kids out on the front yard and not have to worry about them being kidnapped in a moment or have to endure a ricocheting bullet. I think we all want that same thing. And if we talk about school choice, I think what we're really saying is we want our kids to be able to find a place where they'll be successful and dream dreams and go pursue those dreams. But we say public or student choice or education savings accounts. We need to make certain that we're really having a conversation with the everyday person. We talk about elections. People get real hepped up about 2020, 2022. But I think at the base level, what people want is an election process that 99% of people feel is fair and trustworthy, because that's been a stalwart pillar of our democracy for the last 200 years. So I think peeling away the emotion of COVID, I want people to know that I can address a broad swath of issues. There will be some issues that I've got to do some homework on, and I'm going to do that homework because, quite frankly, I enjoy doing homework.
Well, that, you know, you just kind of alienated every young voter ever who doesn't like homework, doctor, but that's okay. I'm, you know, it's all good. No,
let me jump in there, boys.
Yeah. I liked homework too, by the way. I liked homework too, by the way. So full disclosure.
Well, what I was going to say is, and you mentioned young people. The young people are giving me homework, because when I go talk to the young people, their issues are different than the old Republican guard. The young people are asking, in a world that we live in where big pharma and big tech have so much impact on our world, how do we talk about consumer protection? How do we talk about corporate responsibility? How do we talk about conservation of resources? And how are we going to be good stewards of the environment? This is important, and it's something that we really need in the Republican Party to embrace. We need the younger people to put us on the spot and make sure that their questions are not only being asked, but also being answered.
You bring up election integrity, and you said 99% of people would trust it. Not so long ago, I think that 99% of Minnesotans trusted their policy. But there's been this narrative. There's been mistruths. There's been partisanship. There's been polarization. In Minnesota, do you trust Minnesota elections? And do you trust the 2022 election to be fair for you if you're in the general election?
That's a loaded question.
Well, no, it's not, because you've been on the ballot. You know the process.
Yeah. And I'm going to say it. I think that going forward, there's many people that are concerned about what's going to happen in 2022. And I have told them, I'm confident that we're going to have a reasonably fair election. And it's going to, if you will, give us the results that are accurate. I think that people are concerned about vouching and harvesting and absentee ballot abuse and things like that. I get it. But I think we have both sides of the aisle very impressed with the need to have the 2022 election be a celebration of what we can be. So I am confident, Blois, that it's going to be a good election process. I think you're going to have people on both sides of the aisle have their own little angle. But I think the fact that both sides are going to be working to make sure that they're fair, it's just sort of the same thing. 2000 and 2004, clearly the Democrats on a national basis were concerned about the elections. And then you look at the Republicans on the 2020 election and you see that there have been concerns during this century. And I'm hoping that we can all pull together and say, hey, listen, let's have fair and trustworthy elections, because we used to have more confidence. But I think the simplest way for this to really work out well, Blois, is for me to win by 10% rather than 1%.
Well, my little anecdote on that is that no Minnesota gubernatorial election, except for maybe one, has been decided within the last 10 days of the election since 1990. So just so you know, if you win by 10 points and I make my prediction, right or wrong, I won't make that prediction until the last 10 days of the election, Doctor. My guest is Scott Jensen. This is Sunday Take. As we kind of wrap up this conversation, Doc, as you think about those things, you know, those messages, whether it's social media or ads or speeches that do kind of breed more distrust, or they pit people against each other, or they pit conventional medicine versus alternative medicine versus public health versus, you know, rural greater Minnesota doctor. How do we find some unity around who and what to trust? Because that seems to be one of the strategies of both parties, is kind of disintegrating trust. And to be frank, that's one of the things that I've been critical of your campaign, is that I feel like sometimes you guys float ideas that might get a lot of social media clicks, but they might make my neighbor go, I thought I liked him, but now I don't know him. And that's where I hear feedback from everyday people that really goes into how I think about this governor's race.
Blois, the internet was cutting out a little bit there, so I missed quite a bit of it. Could you just give me the question you rebuild, want me to respond to?
How do we rebuild trust? Because we don't have a lot of it right now. And what I have experienced in watching governor's races is the one who's trusted the most wins. And for you, and knowing you for 5-6 years now, people will say, oh, I really liked what he said. And then the next day you say something else and they're like, wait, is that the same guy? And so how do we trust, whether or not it's you or anybody else, about the information that's out there? Because not everybody has time to do homework and they're busy raising their kids. And there's agendas behind almost every message that we see now.
I would say that I can be an effective trust builder. When I was in the Senate in 2019, I think I was chief author of 7 bills, including the pharmacy benefit manager bill, which was new chapter in statute. And every one of my bills not only passed off the Senate floor, every one of those bills passed unanimously. I think the reason that took place is because what we talked before, Blois, I do my homework. And I went both sides of the aisle and explained the bills and what I was trying to accomplish. If I don't speak with enough clarity, that's my bad, because I think there are times where I'm brainstorming and I want to make sure we uncover an issue. I thought that the legislature was a little short on intellectual curiosity. And so I think that was something I maybe brought to the table, and maybe I need to be more clear. And I'm going to try to do that. That there are times where I'm having conversations and I think with conviction, this is what we need to do. And there are other times where I say, we need to not necessarily be stuck on where we're at right now, but we need to ask questions. You said, how are we going to build the trust? How are we going to move from where we are today as a broken state to a state that has bridges being built between groups all over the place? Because that's where we need to go. I think it starts with asking questions rather than trying to pummel someone with your own best argument. I think Stephen Covey said that when he talked about 7 habits of effective people. Seek first to understand, then be understood. And I'm going to try to do that. Blois, I don't want to take too much of your time, but I would say this. I have tried hard to not be a name caller. I think that people would be hard pressed to find me calling anybody a name, because I think that's the quickest way to put up a wall. I'm going to try to build bridges, but I'm also going to speak as clearly as I can to the issues. And I appreciate your reminder that as a gubernatorial candidate, I need to do that if we're going to be successful as a state going forward. That's a good point.
Dr. Scott Jensen, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take. I know we will talk more throughout this campaign. Next up, he's the new guy in the race. Rich Stanek joins me for the final conversation of Sunday Take here on News Talk 830 WCCO. Welcome back to Sunday Take. My next guest is former Hennepin County Sheriff Rich Stanek. This week, he made news by jumping into the governor's race as a Republican. He did it on Tuesday, the same day as caucuses. It's an interesting timing to enter a race. I've known former Sheriff Stanek for a number of years, and happy that he can join the show this morning. Thanks, Sheriff, for joining. What's the first 7 or 5 days of running for governor been like?
Well, good morning, Blaise. It's great to be here this morning. I get a chance to listen to your show on a weekly basis. I know you always do a great job, and it's an honor to be here. Thanks. As far as the first 5 days, honestly, it's been a whirlwind, but it's even beyond my expectations that I had set for campaign launch and the generous support of Minnesotans, as well as the overall comments and feedback and encouragement I've received across the state, whether it's a couple of days ago, I was up in northern Minnesota, spent the last couple of days on the phone. But so far, it's been phenomenal, and I'm enjoying it.
That's good. You know, I asked you about this last summer, I know, and probably a few times in between. So I know that it wasn't just out of thin air that you decided to put your name in the hat for governor. Why? What was it about now and the timing that made you get in, you know, February 1st, 2022?
Yeah, I appreciate that. Well, I think I told you when we had lunch last summer, you'd asked me about this. I told you candidly, I had thought about it. People were encouraging me. You know, honestly, that encouragement never stopped. In fact, it got resoundingly louder over the last couple months. You look at the escalation of violent crime, people not safe in their neighborhoods, schools, communities. You look at the other issues that are going on across Minnesota, and they encouraged me to come back to give this more thought and run for governor of the state. I'm the only one in this race that's got the proven track record of getting it done. Others can talk about it. I've actually done it. Sometimes you've even been you've been alongside me, depending on what the situation was.
That's true. And I always try to be transparent. So as I said before, we've known each other a long time. And I swallowed my coffee wrong there. But law enforcement.
I know CPR.
Boys. Yeah, right. I don't need it right now, but thank you. Public safety is, I think, the number one issue. I've said that. I've written it. It's there. But there are other issues in our state. Education and the economy. Obviously, you've got background in law enforcement, but talk about if you're governor or as you're running for governor, how you see addressing what parents are feeling about education, what people are feeling about our economy, where you might see things differently than the core of the Republican Party today.
Well, I think it's important for your listeners to understand who Rich Stanek is and where Rich Stanek came from. You know, no big surprise, lifelong, born and raised here in Minnesota, Minneapolis, as a matter of fact, and then 40 years public service career, 38 years as a police officer. I've also been a state legislator. I served state government and then Hennepin County Sheriff for the last 12 years. But that's one part of the story. The other part I think you're asking about, honestly, is, well, why? Who are you? I'm a father. I'm a husband. I'm a member of my community and church and local civic groups. I'm just like everybody else. And just like all the other Minnesotans out here wanting the best for our kids and our families, I'm not happy with where I see, you know, some things with education going where parents are not allowed to be involved in the choices that are happening at the schools with the kids. I want parental involvement. I want people to understand what's going on. As governor of this great state, I will ensure that we'll get it done each and every day.
That is kind of the undertone of this campaign. People have paid more attention to government probably in the last couple of years due to the pandemic and other issues. You've been in and around government. Government obviously has a role, but there's been this kind of push in the Republican Party. It started maybe with the Tea Party, has been amplified by former President Trump about just, you know, government being treated differently, public officials being treated differently, regardless of the party, right? The tone and tenor of the discussion, if there is even a discussion, can that be changed? Or do you think, with all your experience, that that's just the way things have to be now when it comes to polarization and kind of the anger that's in public service?
You know, I think public service versus elected office, two distinctly different things in my mind. Now, I chose public service. I also chose, for some aspect of it, and certainly in this governor's race, the elected side of it, because that's the way it is. I think, you know, we should be empowering people, my friends and my neighbors, to make the decisions and the choices on their own behalf. You said it, jobs in the economy, inflation, fair and safe elections, government mandates and lockdowns, education, parents being intimately involved in their kids' education. Those are all really important issues for Minnesotans. Those are things that we live and breathe day in and day out. I don't need the government to tell me how to raise my kids, how to educate my children. I just went to a local coffee shop to have a cup of coffee with a supporter. You know, since I walked into the door, put your mask on. In the city in which I live in, they don't have a mask mandate, right? But the city I just visited absolutely does. It cuts both ways. What do real people want? What do they want from their government? They want to be free from government intervention and mandates.
My guest is Rich Stanek. He's the former Hennepin County Sheriff, and he announced this week he's running for governor. You're listening to Sunday Take on News Talk 830 WCCO. I'm your host, Blois Olson. As we wrap here, you're going to get a lot of questions about police reform, about prosecutorial reform, sentences. You've been on the front lines of law enforcement. I know you've followed it closely since. Just this last week, we had a situation where Minneapolis police executed a, you know, quote unquote, no knock warrant at 6 o'clock in the morning. And Amir Locke was shot. The video's out. It shows that he has a gun. Is there a better, what's the better way? Is there a different way to handle a situation like this? Because look, I'm not in law enforcement. I have all the respect in the world for those people who put their life on the line, but it just seems like case after case, from George Floyd to Dante Wright, that Minnesota is going to continue to be kind of the center point of some of these discussions about reform or changes to the way in which law enforcement operates, that that's going to be a big part of the governor's race.
You know, I think you're absolutely right. As far as the fatal shooting this week, you know, the facts are still coming out. I don't know what the facts are or aren't. What I do know, though, is we can always strive to do a little bit better. I know that a number of reforms have been put in place with Minneapolis police. I don't know what broke down, if anything, this time around, but I understand that law enforcement has a really tough job to do. And they're your neighbors. They're the same people you see at the grocery store and the movie theater. And they pick up their kids from daycare and school just like we do. But, you know, moving forward across Minnesota, this violent crime epidemic has to come to an end. And I will use every possible resource available to me as the governor of this great state to curtail violent crime, to bring it down, to make people feel safe in their communities and neighborhoods. And as I said earlier, Blois, I mean, the other candidates, including Tim Walz, can talk about it. Tim Walz had ample opportunity to do it. He didn't do it. We all saw the iconic images and photos of Minneapolis burning, you know, just 18 months ago. And now we're feeling the effects of it with businesses and the economy. The others can talk about it, but I've actually done it. I've got a proven track record. I will be here. I will get it done. I welcome people to join me in this effort.
Last question. You talk about your track record. There was some stories out this week about prior court case in which, you know, there was a transcript in which you used the N-word or didn't use the N-word. I don't want to focus on that, but your past from MPD to other stuff, everybody who puts their name in for public office, their past comes up. As you think about your past and you look ahead to the future, what do people need to know about Rich Stanek then versus Rich Stanek now?
You know, it's another great question, Blois. I've been in law enforcement for 38 years. I saw and heard things that no one should ever be subjected to. And, you know, honestly, that's part of the job of being a police officer. And because of that, you get involved in a lot of different situations. I've never been disciplined as a police officer, not in Cottage Grove, not with Minneapolis, not the Hennepin County Sheriff's Office. I will say that, you know, that deposition and when these things come up, as we said, politics is a nasty business. That's why many people don't get involved in it. They've been taking a deposition that I gave 30 years ago in a civil litigation case out of context for nearly 20 years. And at the end of the day, I'm a fair, tough individual who does the job, who puts bad guys away, who people rely on and have relied on for the past 38 years to get the job done on their behalf. On the flip side, hey, look, I'm a family guy. I'm a husband, community member, compassionate, integrity, respect. Those are the rules of the day that we followed, whether it was Hennepin County Sheriff or Rich Stanek, the citizen, or Rich Stanek, the governor of the great state of Minnesota.
Rich, thanks for joining me on Sunday Take. I know we'll talk a lot more throughout this process, including, you know, I'll probably have a debate to moderate with you and your opponents, whether it's for the primary or the general. So thanks for joining me on Sunday Take.
Good. Keep up the great work, Blois.
Thanks. When it's Sunday at 9 a.m. on News Talk 830 WCCO, it's Sunday Take. I'm your host, Blois Olson. If you want to follow us closer, go to fluence-newsletters.com, subscribe to our newsletters, follow me on Twitter at Blois Olson.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. T-Mobile.com.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Oh, 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 O'Reilly Auto Parts.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL Draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.